Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack.
Welcome to episode 37 of Top Shelf at Merrick Library. I'm your host, Carol Ann Tack, and today I am so excited to be hosting Erica Swiler, author of Light from Other Stars. The book also just so happens to be the 2020 Long Island Read Selection, which really is absolutely amazing. And before I get to that, I just want to tell you a little bit about Erica Swiler. She is the best-selling author of the critically acclaimed novels The Book of Speculation, and today her featured novel, which we'll be discussing, is Light from Other Stars. Erica is a graduate of NYU's Tisch School of the Arts, and her essays and short fiction have appeared in Catapult, Literary Hub, Vita, The New York Times, and that's just to name a few. Born and raised on Long Island's North Shore, Erica currently resides there with her husband and a petulant rabbit, which I will be asking about. Erica, thank you so much for joining me on Merrick Library's Top Shelf.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It is a pleasure to be here.
Would you tell us, because anything I say will hardly do it justice, would you tell us about this fascinating book, Light from Other Stars? What's the inspiration? Where does this whole idea come from?
It's a difficult book to explain.
Yes, it is.
I like to say that my books are hard to explain, but they're easy to get. So a small town period piece set in 1986 Florida that is about fathers and daughters, mothers and daughters. It's also a space opera and it's a time-stopping romp.
Wow.
So it's, yeah, it is all of these things, but it started with a very small question of what makes fathers and daughters grow apart and, you know, when that happens. And that started really small question. And it usually happens, I want to say, around puberty when fathers start to think of their daughters as, oh, that's more being a woman. And daughters sort of wonder, well, what the heck happened? Where did my daddy go? And that became a question about, well, what if a father could stop his daughter from growing up so he could hang on to her a little bit longer? And that grew from there as to, well, what time stopping might look like. And then that became, well, what does that look like for women? And what does that look like for our future? What happens when you mess with time? So, yeah, that's a little bit about the book. It's set half in 1986 in Space Coast, Florida, in the aftermath of the Challenger disaster. And it's set half in the nearish future aboard a space module named Chawla that is going to colonize an unnamed planet. So that's a little bit about the book. And, yeah, I wanted to really think about progress for women, what that looks like, how far we've come, how difficult it was for mothers in the 1980s, and how their daughters were told that they could be anything that they want to be, and how that might not be true, and when that might become true.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because we talked about this in a book discussion that I just had at Merrick Library for the book, and we talked a lot about the mom, Bethy, and giving up her career and staying home, raising the children, you know, doing that traditional choice that people were making, and they still make it today. And
yes,
I will get to that in a bit, but I do want to mention something, and I don't want to forget. The book opens with a poem by John Gillespie McGee Jr. called High Flight. It is a beautiful, beautiful piece of poetry. I actually posted it when I did my book discussion. I had a big slide with the poem up there so everyone could read it. We read it out loud. It is the perfect start for the book. And it's also the very perfect ending to the book. And I love how you brought that full circle. What can you tell us about the poem? How did you find it?
Sure. So I've known about the poem, I want to say, since for most of my life, because in the wake of the Challenger disaster, Reagan actually on TV read it aloud as he was eulogizing in some ways the astronauts and the loss. And so for me at that point in time, the poem became inextricably intertwined with space exploration and how and science meeting faith in a way. So it was a perfect thing for opening the book because we start with the Challenger disaster and a young girl, you know, Netta questioning, well, what are the heavens? Why do we call them the heavens? How is that space? What do we believe? And then it sort of nicely bookends because Netta is in fact facing that later in her own life when she is, in theory, in the heavens. So, you know, it's and believe it or not, that's not a spoiler because things sort of the book kind of goes back and forth in time a lot. So, yeah, I would say High Flight bookends how I think about both space and flight in general. I'm also just a nut for aviation. The skies have always belonged to women, the way I look at it. So High Flight was a natural thing to have.
Yeah, it is a perfect fit, like you said. And of course, we know that Reagan had that poem. So when I read the book, for me, there was just so many connections that were made. Also, as a brief aside, I used to be the librarian for Aviation Week and Space Technology Magazine back in the day. So, of all the crazy things, right? So they took a chance on me and hired me to be their librarian back in the day. And I still have, I think, all the back issues because I was the indexer there and I was in charge of all the photography. So I would get pictures of the shuttles and the space. I mean, it was unbelievable.
I'm jealous.
Yeah,
I'm
the material very I had jealous. Access to. It was what a job. It was really mm-hmm. kind of like a dream come true. It got me that much closer to outer space in some way. So I love that you chose it. And I wanted to ask, the town where Netta and Theo and Bethine, the town that they all live in is called, it's a fictional town called Easter, Florida.
Yes.
And I love that you named it Easter. I loved it. Yes, I'm about to fangirl again. So listeners, you all just have to bear with me. Tell me about the significance of choosing the name of Easter.
Sure. Well, there are two real parts to it. First of all, calling a town a holiday is incredibly Floridian. There is a Christmas Florida, and it's near Orlando. It's in that town. So yeah, it's very Floridian, but you'll notice there is sort of a rebirth and Rip Van Winkle theme to the book without spoiling too much.
Right.
So Easter in and of itself, I did sort of want to conjure a resurrection kind of theme. And yeah, it just felt spring-like as well, and tying into these ideas of faith, but also having this happen in a town that's heavily influenced by science and technology. So I wanted these combinations of things and something that felt really rooted. I would say the town itself is loosely based on Titusville and Mims and towns in that Space Coast area of Florida. So it's where Old World Florida and citrus growing sort of combines with this new technology, and you know, the brightest tech minds and science minds in the U.S. are all there. So it's this combination of things, and that felt like a rebirth to me. So that's kind of where Easter came from.
And it's really interesting because when we did this book discussion last week, one of the things that we touched on so many different topics because the book is just a plethora of material that you've given us, and it is really good for book discussions for that reason. We talked about Easter having a faith resonance, right? So you've mm-hmm. got all the science fiction, which is what you mentioned, but science and technology, but you also have these brush strokes of faith throughout the entire book. And it is so, it's so beautifully intertwined. And what I love is that the readers got it. So if I had 50 people in that room, they understood how you did that. And they were, they were really appreciative of that. Sometimes that doesn't always happen, but in this case, it really did. And I love that we were able to tie in High Flight. And then I brought in Easter as sort of, okay, so this is what the book says it's about, but look at these underlying things, this other stuff going on here, not just the science part of it. So it was easy to do that. That was your gift to us. So thank you.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Part of what I really wanted to tackle with the book are these things that people think exclude each other. Like people think that science excludes faith and that faith excludes science. And the two are really so intertwined, I can't even begin to fully explain it. Part of the genesis from this book was an NPR piece I'd heard back in 2005. If you search for, you want a physicist to speak at your funeral.
Right, right.
It's that. Yeah. And towards the end of this piece, he's saying, well, you know, you want people to rely on facts and not faith. But in doing so, relying on that actually is a kind of faith. So I find these things are not mutually exclusive the way people think they are. And I wanted to, you know, play with that and dissect that a little bit in the same way that people often think, oh, well, the humanities and the arts are separate from the sciences, but they really do feed into each other and they don't exist without each other. So that was important for me to play with. And it's really exciting for me when readers pick that up and they feel feel sort of an opening instead of just, oh, these are very closed off things.
Yeah, and I'm going to say we spent a good 10 minutes talking about the relationship between the science and faith in the book, which was a wonderfully illuminative discussion. It really was something else. I have so many favorite things about this book, and I was numbering them in my mind when I was prepping for the podcast because I thought, well, which one do I really want to talk about first? And the first item that popped into my head, the first thought was that my number one favorite thing about the book is the Reg Peterson storyline.
Oh, good.
Now, it's not long, but man, I just loved what happened there. I love what happened to him. I love this. It's a sidebar, but it almost read like a short story piece. Tell me about that whole Reg thing. It's just unbelievable.
It's really important to me that a book not just feel like a complete straight through neat storyline, that a book feels like it's part of a larger world and that there is a world around the story. And so pulling in a character like Reg Peterson, who's essentially, you know, just a side, he's a tangent off of Easter proper, felt really important to show, well, what happens when you're stuck outside a main event, but you continue on without it? And that is important. How people react to, you know, the strange when they're just sort of watching it from a distance and they can't really figure out if it's actually happening is part of the world. And he also sort of functions as a reprieve from the tension.
Right.
And when you're writing something that is really focusing on just continual action and trauma and, you know, these very strong emotions, it's important to give a reader a pullback. And that helps them realize, you know, the scope of what they're feeling, just how large and how small the world is. And also, it's really important, I think, to have some moments of pure joy. And for me, writing that Reg thing was a break and it was pure joy and it felt really human. It felt like, well, while all these large things are going on, there are small moments, and those are just as important. So Reg for me.
Yeah, and I felt we were Reg, like you say, because this is his outsider view peering in and how it's affecting him. And his storyline was just, and it's not long, but it was joyful to read, I have to say. Which brings me to my next piece that I loved. And I mean, I had tears in my eyes. There's a chapter called, I'm going to get the number wrong, so I'm just going to say it. There's a small chapter called 299-792-458, I'm assuming miles in space. It's astounding. It is just an astounding chapter. And the way that relates to what Netta sees of the planet at the end, the Transformers and the bots, that whole connection and the way you circle back there. I've reread that chapter I don't know how many times, and I went back, reread it. Tell me about this particular chapter, because when I read it, it was absolutely joyful to me.
Oh, good. So it's actually meters per second, and it's the speed of light.
Oh, meters per second. Yeah. Okay, well, there you go. Sorry, folks.
No. I put it in sort of, I titled it that as sort of an Easter egg, because I feel like if you come to my books, you're not a lazy reader, and you want to learn things, and you'll Google something, you'll look something up, and for those people who already just knew off the top of their head because they're, you know, giant science nerds or whatever, it would just be a little gift like, oh, I know what that is. So it was a little chapter tease. I think throughout a book that had so much questioning, and for Theo, who is as determined as he is to do good by his daughter and right by his own grief, he has so many questions. You know, he's a very focused person who still just doesn't know a lot. And to have his own dreams and to have his own vision of what lies beyond be realized felt really important. And he had so much pain throughout the book, both physically and emotionally. I felt like that needed to be rewarded in some way, that would give him purpose, that would give, you know, just sort of catharsis for a reader in that way as well.
I love that you did that.
Thank you. And I think also the reader sort of needed, and I needed to know that Netta was being watched over.
She really is. That's the beauty of this chapter. That's exactly right.
And her role throughout the book, she is watching so much that it felt like a nice bookend in some ways to have her being watched as well.
It's a faith.
It really is.
I don't want to say too much because I don't know if everybody's read it yet by this time. But
it is sort of hard to talk around.
Right. It is, because I know that Long Island Franklin Reeds may, you know, play this at some point, and I don't want to blow it for them. We'll talk about it maybe off mic.
Sure.
But that piece of it connecting to the end, really, boy, did it hit me. It was beautiful. And I love that Netta gets that. I love that she's able to have that happen to her, even though she's not really sure. But we're getting all this faith coming in again, this love that transcends all these other things. And that's what's so nice about what you do here, because you combine this family drama within a science fiction and maybe speculative fiction kind of storyline, and you do it.
Yeah, there's a bit in there.
Which is my wheelhouse. I live there. You do it so beautifully. At that book discussion, as part of this Long Island Read celebration, when I first described the book, I heard groans. Oh my gosh, I don't like science fiction. How am I going to read this? It's not my thing. I'm not interested. I kept saying, have a little faith, because I'm telling you, it's going to be great. You have to just know Long Island Reads picks books, really good books, for a reason. So when we read it and we began our discussion, I was absolutely delighted that more than a few readers really enjoyed that aspect of the book. They said, you know, it wasn't quite the hurdle that I thought it was going to be, or it went a lot easier than I thought. I understood more than I thought. And then one woman actually said, you know, the fact that this stuff that happens in the book goes on in space is almost incidental to the family relationships and the drama between the characters.
Mm-hmm. I think I like to say that this book is literary science fiction.
Yes.
It's science fiction for readers who don't yet know that they like science fiction, and it's literary fiction for science fiction readers who don't yet know that they like literary fiction. Because there is this odd sort of divide that happens between, you know, genres and commercial and whether that seems to forget that books are just trying to get at the same thing, all of them, regardless of genre, which is, what is this mess of being human and what does that mean? So the struggle for me in some ways has been that a lot of women in particular, I find, have been told that they don't like science fiction.
Right.
They've been told that it is something that men read or boys read, and it is very heavy on math and science and military stuff. And I mean, there are those aspects to things, but it's more that they've been steered away, and it's a gendering of interest that starts really, really young. And I think that that's unfortunate. And when you find things like that, you have to ask, who benefits from you not reading something? Who benefits from you not exploring something? And it's certainly not women.
Right.
And it's the same sort of thing with people who have been steered away from literary fiction. They've been told, oh, well, you know, it's only about professors having affairs with their students, and it's all highfalutin, and there's absolutely no plot. And that's simply not true. I mean, there are those books, but when you cut yourself off from a genre and say, well, I don't explore this, you're missing a lot of exploration of, again, what it is to be human, and what feelings mean, and what life experience is. And I think the books that I like to read sort of combine these things. So as I've been, you know, talking about this book and touring with it and whatnot, the discussions I've been able to have with people about, well, who told you you didn't like this, have been pretty illuminating. And I think I've gotten more people to read more genre, and I've gotten more people to read more literary fiction. And I'm very excited. I seem to have gotten some people who haven't read women before to read women.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's been exciting that way. So I find a lot of the people who have, you know, who are afraid of math and science, they're just afraid because it's been explained to them very badly. And this is a pretty good intro book in the sense that most of what I'm explaining from the perspective of an 11-year-old girl, as you would say something to a smart 11-year-old girl. Not brilliant, just smart. And that's a good intro level for people who have sort of been out of science for a while, or told that things were too hard for them. So I think it's a good gateway. It's a gateway drug for science fiction.
You point out that it is from the perspective of an 11-year-old, right? So so Theo is explaining Crucible to Netta, and I thought, well, if someone had explained it to me that way when I was in school, I probably would have been fine. And like you mentioned, genre-specific work, each genre has a subgenre. So within science fiction, you've got your hard science fiction, you've got your space operas, and people live in their own little subgenre. I'm a sucker for a great space opera.
Me too.
Because it's human. It's just, these people are thrown into this situation, and how do they react to this outside that environment. One of the women in the book discussion came up to me in a very sort of confidential way, said, you know, I just didn't think I was going to understand it. And here's this woman of a certain age in front of me that, you know, I think I'll read something and be like, I'm not really sure I understand that. For example, I thought it was miles in space when it's meters per second. So I just, but I own that, right?
Okay. But that's fine. And I mean, it's just the curiosity that's really important, you know, and the cure for ignorance is curiosity.
Right. Perfect.
That's it. And I hope, my hope is that if you're picking up a book, you're a curious person naturally. And so when you don't understand something, you can, there are two ways you can approach it. You can either say, oh, this is not for me and move on, or you can say, maybe it is. And what is this about? And I think when you're picking up a book and it speaks to you on an emotional level, it sort of, it lends itself towards curiosity about the stuff that you may not understand right away. So that's sort of why I really wanted to live in both that literary world and that sci-fi world. I thought, well, this could possibly open things for people.
And it certainly did for that group. So I am appreciative of the book, and I am so appreciative that Long Island Reads chose it. I love them. So I will tell the listeners about Long Island Reads, because not everybody is from our little area, our neck of the woods. Long Island Reads is an amazing island-wide reading initiative. I love that they do this every year. It's sponsored by the Nassau Library System and the Public Libraries of Suffolk County. And each year, a committee of incredible librarians, can you tell that I love the committee? incredible librarians, they choose a book that was written by a Long Island author and or it's set on Long Island. So book lovers in Nassau and Suffolk come together. We read the book. We participate in discussions and we enjoy all kinds of related events that are in their public libraries, our public libraries. We all share the experience. So, Erica, when you get the call that Light from Other Stars was the 2020 selection, what did you think? How did that go down?
Oh my gosh, I was thrilled. I mean, okay, so the first thing I realized, Colson Whitehead.
Exactly, right, yes.
Has been this, and Edom Megwalitzer, and it's coming home. Oh. I mean, everything I write has been influenced by my having grown up here, by the people around here. I've spent so much of my life within the public library system of Long Island and Suffolk County Libraries essentially raised me. So, I had a little moment of tearing up, crying.
Oh.
And yeah, it was really just wonderful. And it's just nice to have people who know where you come from understand what you're saying, you know?
Yeah, because it's a supportive group. So that's one of the
really
other things
is.
That I love about Long Island Reads is they support their own. And they go out of their way. They work tirelessly. The stuff that goes on behind the scenes is unbelievable. And it's a tireless effort. They put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into this every year. And you will be appearing at Plainview Old Bethpage Library in Plainview. Mm-hmm. And that's Sunday, April 19th at 2 p.m. There will be books available for purchase and signing. The event is free. All are welcome. There are free tickets available, and I don't really know how many are left, but the website, I'll put it on the podcast page. It's lireads2020.eventbrite.com, but I'll put a link on the podcast page for the episode. And in addition to that April 19th event at Plainview Old Bethpage Library, there will be book discussions, related free lectures, films, performances at public libraries across Long Island. So listeners, if you are local, please check your home library newsletters for all of that information. Merrick, we just did ours last week in advance of all of this. So if you didn't come out, you didn't get to see me in my NASA jumpsuit, but those pictures are available on Twitter. So you can go and Facebook, so you can go look at those. Now, Erica, as you gear up for April 19th, in the meantime, is there a place where readers can find whatever you're doing next, the latest and the greatest, a website, et cetera?
Yes. So there is my website, ericasweiler.com. Very simple that way. And I have an appearances tab, and that says where I will be popping up. My very next thing is the Tucson Festival of Books. But after that, I will be, throughout libraries on Long Island, a lot on the East End as well. So my schedule events are all up on my website, and I'm also all over Twitter, so I'm very easy to reach.
And I love you mentioned that the Tucson Festival. There's a lot of different authors that you just sort of follow on Twitter, and that's going to be some event. There's so many people going.
It is one of the best book festivals in the country. It's one of the largest, but it's just the town is so friendly. The volunteers are amazing. And it's just, it's a place to meet people and also make friends. And doing that in a literary setting, that's the absolute best. It's my favorite.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. And I think the only thing that we have close to it here, in at least in the tri-state, is Book Expo, which I think is in
yes.
this year.
Yeah.
So that's always, oh my God, talk about getting my nerd on, for heaven's sake.
Oh, I mean, Book Expo is a trip. It's great.
It is really great. I cannot thank you enough for being here. I don't want to ask you, even though I do want to ask you, if you're working on something next, or you're just sort of settling in and enjoying this ride.
Oh, I'm always working. It takes me a while. I'm a slow writer because ideas percolate and I pull in from all sorts of different places. But yes, I am working.
That's fabulous news. Now I'm really excited. I will provide all of the links to Erica Swiler's website, where you can find her on social media. And most importantly, I will include the link to the Long Island Reads page so you can reserve your free tickets to see Erica in person. And I will also feature a link to place your reserve for both of Erica's books, the Book of Speculation and then Light from Other Stars. Folks, please do not miss this book. It's excellent for book discussions. You won't be disappointed. Erica, you are so wonderful. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been delightful.
All right, listeners, thank you for joining us. Remember to follow Top Shelf at Merrick Library on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you find most podcasts. For the latest and the greatest at the Merrick Library, check out our fabulous website, merricklibrary.org. Special thanks to Merrick Library Director Dan Chosmier and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and onto the airwaves. Until next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.